What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Welcome to Night Call, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome to a Night Call holiday special release of a book club episode. Normally, these book club episodes are reserved solely for our Patreons, but we're opening it up for the holidays to try and convince more of you to join our book club Patreon, and also as a little treat. This book club episode is Communion by Whitley Strieber, a very strange sort of holiday tale about an alien abduction that may or may not have happened. Please enjoy, and we will be back with more Night Calls in 2020.
It's 11:48 p.m. in a cabin in upstate New York, and you're listening to the Night Call Book Club. Hello and welcome back to the Night Call Book Club. My name is Tess Lynch. I'm in Los Angeles, and with me I have
Molly Lambert and
Emily Yoshida.
Guys, for this month's book club, we're doing Communion, and this was probably, I thought this was our most difficult and dense book to get through.
I'm excited.
And I chose it.
I'm excited to up that challenge, but yes.
Yeah.
It was like the first thing that felt like a primary source into the paranormal.
Yeah.
With all the baggage that comes with that. But I'll just say up front, in the interest of total transparency, I did not finish this book this month. I am very, very sorry to all of our Patreon subscribers. I will always try to finish it from here on out. I was just in the middle of moving. And
we just
want to
say also, if you don't finish the book club book, if life gets in the way and you don't finish the book, that's okay.
Well, in the case of this one, it can be a book club for like Whitley Strieber's personal website or Wikipedia entry or like anything having to do with him.
I generally hate book clubs actually, because as soon as I get assigned a book, it's like the last thing I want to do. It just takes me to high school in that way always, you know? Anytime I've ever been in a book club before, it's just been like, oh, what a big responsibility.
Send yourself up to get in trouble with your friends.
But
that's what a book club is.
I love the Night Call Book Club because I also, I feel like nobody's judgmental about
it. It's a cool jazz book club.
Yeah, you can read the book however you like. You can watch the movie. It's not like that Seinfeld episode. If you watch the movie of Communion and that's what you're working off of, that's fine too.
I really wanted to see the movie of Communion. I haven't yet.
Oop. Same, yeah.
We should maybe do a bonus ep or something for
the
movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm so, I like, because that was the first thing when we started reading it. I, of course, saw, oh, there was a movie made with Christopher Walken in it. Must check this out. And yep. The images from it are incredible. So I was very, very curious.
And the author didn't approve of it because he thought Christopher Walken played him as a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what Communion's about.
Yeah. Oh, God, you guys.
And let's talk about Whitley Strieber, too.
Yeah. Well, Whitley Strieber is kind of the most interesting thing about, because Communion derailed his entire career. So basically, Communion.
That's what they say, but it's like it started his career as a UFOologist guy.
Ufologist.
He also posts. So we should say about Whitley Strieber.
He's a horror author.
He's a horror author. He was supposed to be like the next Stephen King. Almost, if not every single one of his books has been turned into a movie. Most mm-hmm. of them very high grossing movies.
Yeah.
He wrote The Hunger, which is like turned into a movie that's a personal favorite of mine by Tony Scott, starring Catherine Deneuve and David Bowie. He did The Day After Tomorrow was based on.
And that was recently.
And that was post his life getting ruined. I'm doing air quotes right now by Communion. So he's like, done okay for himself.
Yeah, he's doing great. Fine.
And it's almost as if he's made a bargain.
Well, it's also part of what he talks about being exiled from is that his like super rich New York penthouse friends started to think he was too weird to associate with.
Yeah.
Which is like.
Well, to be fair, he started associating with a lot of ufologists and, you know, alien fans.
Yeah, but I'm
and
saying
I think
now
that
we know that
some of his friends were really fringy.
Right, but some of these people were like taking a plane to secret pedo island. So I'm just saying, maybe Whitley Strieber chose the right stripe of the conspiracy world to
you
go
could
towards.
Be in those like secretive pedo island New Yorker conversations, or you could be talking about. What did he say? He like hung out with Lou Reed and they talked about
aliens.
They talked about UFOs with Lou Reed.
Conspiracy theories.
I don't know. Seems pretty chill to me.
So Whitley Strieber is from Texas.
Yeah, he's from San Antonio or near San Antonio originally.
And then he wrote a bunch of horror novels that got adapted. And then Communion, he started writing in the 80s.
Yeah, it's based on a bunch of experiences, but the primary experience is the one that started all happened in late 1985, October and December of the day after Christmas, 1985.
After he had finished his Christmas goose.
Finished his Christmas goose and working on a hearty novel about the Russian Revolution.
And he's cross-country skiing a lot.
Yeah.
So he had two experiences, I believe, in 1985, one in October and one the day after Christmas are the two that he kind of focuses on.
Both at this upstate house. That he's gotten with his Hollywood riches.
It's his weekend house.
Yes.
Over the course, so the book was published in 1987, very soon after these events transpired. And then over the course of the book, he kind of goes back into his past via regressive hypnosis and discovers that he has had earlier contacts with visitors, but also. One of the weird things about Communion is that it's kind of credited with like establishing the gray as the stereotypical alien form. Mm-hmm. But Whitley Strieber is really clear throughout the book that he has no reason to believe that these are extraterrestrials. Like, he's kind of like, I think maybe, but I have no evidence that they are that.
He gets mad when people say that that's what it is, because he's like, I never said that.
Yeah.
And I said it could be just crazy military experiments where they come kidnap people in the night and do things on them.
Which is way scarier.
Well, there's a interview that was earlier this year, so a very recent interview that I think Tess linked to for us, and we'll include it in our notes. He says something, and I think this is sort of similar to some things he said in the book, where he says, I've also unfortunately had an influence on modern UFO folklore. I think it's all folklore. It's something that people don't understand, and they generate stories about it. What I'm interested in is the something that's there, what's behind them. And he talks a lot about like he goes and does research on other people's UFO experiences prior to that, kind of comparing recurring images and experiences and commonalities and stuff. And like, and that approach to it is like one of the things where I'm like, this feels like a very rational way to if you have an experience that feels unexplained like this, like he's going about like he's doing what I would do,
exactly.
Basically. So I feel like all that is super interesting because it's not like, oh, I've been visited by aliens. It's like I'm having an experience that's similar to these other kind of abnormal experiences that other people have had. Mm-hmm. What can we learn from the sum total of these experiences?
No, I mean, as a testimonial, especially from the beginning, it's framed really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, he's a horror novelist. It's sort of written like a horror novel. It reminded me a lot of some of the H.P. Lovecraft stuff of just mm-hmm. like, was living my life in a weird part of the East Coast, and then an inexplicable thing completely out of my frame of reference happens yeah. that completely horrifies me and makes me unable to function in life. After he has one of the experiences, he tries to kill his son accidentally, sort of.
Wait,
doesn't he like pull a knife on his son or something?
I don't think so.
I don't remember that.
No, there's a part where he's talking about it. He has like this weird encounter with his son, which again, we'll get to that later.
It's after the October incident where they have friends over, and everybody at least shares a recollection of like strange lights and a sound,
a blue light and a crashing noise, like things clattering to the ground.
And then he talks to his son about it. And this is, so like you said, it was like a horror book. This book scared me more than like most other books ever have, because there's this part where he goes to like ask his son and he's like, yeah, I was worried for a second, but then the little doctors came and told me mm-hmm. like it was all going to be okay. And I was just like, it's so like, those sort of unexplainable things. I mean, it really gets into like, kind of like subconscious stuff. It gets into a lot of like childhood memories and the weird foggy, you're not really quite sure what was a dream and what wasn't, that comes out of childhood memories, including his own. That stuff is all super, super interesting to me.
Yeah, and actually I think that's the scariest part is just this the idea that your memories, that some of your memories are what he calls screen memories or memories that replace. And I mean, a lot of, if you kind of go down the web hole from Whitley Strieber to his friend Bud Hopkins, who's mentioned in the book as
isn't
a friend.
Isn't he there
of his,
for the hypnosis?
He guides the hypnosis mm-hmm. with Dr. Klein. But mm-hmm. Bud Hopkins kind of became famous in his own right because he would observe these hypnosis sessions, and then he kind of started these like therapy groups for survivors of alien abductions. But he had no background in psychology, and he was kind of playing fast and loose with people who were describing like really intense and, you know, often the experiences were a lot like rape or mm-hmm. child abuse. And Bud Hopkins was very sure that the alien abductions were real and this is like the only answer. And so the regressive memories through hypnosis and the screen memories, they just obviously, as you're reading the book, there's a feeling of being, you know, the fact that that is like a very dangerous kind of thing to do.
Yeah, there's something so 80s about
it's so 80s.
That is what I remember being the big like panic constantly in the 80s was things like that, was like repressed memories, mm-hmm. people doing regressions that lead to like recovered memories that aren't real. And that was like how they did all this satanic panic stuff.
Yeah.
Was to be like, hey, do you remember when this crazy thing happened? And kids are like, oh, yeah, totally. I remember that happened.
Yeah. I mean, you're still kind of getting out of the trend of analysis mm-hmm. as your main kind of form of therapy in that very kind of old school, still Freudian way. Because screen memory is like a Freud thing.
Yeah.
And all this sort of like psychosexual
screen
stuff.
Screen memory is such a scary idea.
Yeah, well, right?
But I totally... It makes sense, though. But in that case, a lot of this stuff does feel like abuse stories.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
It has the pattern of it, the kind of, the way that the mind shields it from oneself is, it feels really, and then that makes it even scarier then.
Right.
Like, that's not less scary than UFOs.
No. And I think the tricky thing is that Whitley Strieber has, I think the foreword to this book, which was written much later, but when he talks about how depressed he became and how, you know, he was just so frustrated because he feels as though, you know, he's been cleared by neurologists. They thought maybe he had temporal lobe epilepsy or something.
Very
else.
Very clear about that.
He really
gone through a battery
insists.
Of tests. I am good.
He talks about it a lot, but he's just saying, just take me at my word. What I'm describing, there were physical symptoms, in some cases witnesses who were at the cabin who saw something weird happening. So I think he was finding it very upsetting. Like, we're not obviously the first people to say this is not probably what happened. What happened could have been something real. But
also,
different.
All of that stuff when you're saying it, it does just sound like such abuse stuff. Like you're telling everybody what happened, mm-hmm. but nobody believes you.
Yeah.
Like,
well, even like the one thing. So maybe we should go through and just like talk about at least the two 1985 incidents.
Yeah.
And because one thing that I think happens in the first one he talks about, not the first one chronologically, mm-hmm. but the 1980, the day after Christmas one.
Yeah.
Is like this recurring thing that also happens in the one on the train when he's a kid is like yeah. this feeling of like, oh, and then suddenly I was above whatever was going on. Like I was seeing yeah. everything from a bird's eye view, which is just like, I'm just like, oh, that's an out of body experience
exactly.
due to trauma.
Yeah.
like that's what that feels like.
Yeah, that stuff all too. I was just like, if somebody who's had like anxiety attacks,
yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, like disassociating because mm-hmm. you're having something happen that you'd like have to leave your body
yeah.
for.
Yeah. But the day after Christmas one, yes, he had his Christmas goose.
He went cross country skiing.
He went cross country skiing later afterwards and was like unusually fatigued by it. That was like one of his first symptoms that something wasn't right. But
quick interjection. I hate cross country skiing so much. And it's such a like weekender thing to do at your country home where I'm just like, you take something that's like fun and dangerous, you suck the fun out, and then you're like, take a walk. But
see,
we're gonna make it hard.
I don't think I fully understood it. I always thought it was like a competitive sport where you just like ski for a really long time, like long distance skiing.
I mean, that's what it is in like the Olympics
or
something.
But it's like you're walking on skis.
You're on a Nordic track.
You're hiking on skis.
It's not snowshoeing.
Yeah.
I always thought it sounded delightful because
it's kind of fun, I
like
think.
All winter activities.
Being so bundled up and having to swish, swish, swish,
yeah.
swish.
No, any winter activity, yeah. I was like, God, that must be the most fun thing ever, and I'll never get to do it, so I'll never know. Sledding?
It was the only sledding's kind of great. Skiing that I did for so long because my mom used to live in Minnesota, and so she had skis still. Mm-hmm. And like downhill skiing was too expensive. You had to get the rail or the lift pass and all that stuff. But like we would go to Mount Rainier and go cross country skiing, and I hated it when I was little.
biggest fight I ever had with my parents as a child was they would beg me to go cross country skiing with them, and for some reason I just always refused, and it was like a 2-year battle.
It was because your parents were making
never
you
would
do
really,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I was like,
exercise.
It's cold and it's extra. No. Anyway, we digress.
It's a brisk walk.
I just wanted to go
through
on
the wintry woods.
Yeah. Walk
off some of that Christmas goose.
I'll be home eating my goose and my jams.
So yeah. There's like, he gets a little guy comes into his room, a little guy wearing like a plate of armor or something.
Yeah.
Which he thinks is like because they found his gun. And they think he's going to shoot him, so they've, like, pre-armed themselves or something. And he just, like, suddenly is standing up with his clothes off in his room and then is being transported outdoors.
He describes a bunch of, like, weightless hands or gentle hands, like, shuttling him.
Mm-hmm. Out the door. And he's, like, frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can't move. It's very dreamlike. There's one part where he talks, I don't know if it's when he's leaving his room or some other part where they're moving him, but it's like he talks about being like he's like mid-stride
mm-hmm.
and frozen and getting like shuttled out, like floating out. And I was just like, that just sounds like dreams I've had.
Yeah.
It's very evocative.
It also sounds like sleep paralysis.
Right.
A little
that's
bit.
What I also was like, this just sounds like you had a really vivid nightmare that you had sleep paralysis.
But he
during.
Would say that the physically he had been, it looked as though he had been roughed up. So that's his defense against the sleep paralysis argument is there were physical marks. But yeah, so he's brought to
this like clearing in the woods
or
something. And I forget if something happens there. Does he get some kind of
that's where he
thing?
Goes up.
He goes up.
Yeah.
And then he's in a ship.
Yeah.
But
which
he doesn't
is like
know
a
that
small,
for sure. He's like, I'm in a chamber.
Yeah, it's
it
a small,
a
messy room, and he's
it
like really unimpressed.
It smells like cheese.
Like cheese.
And then he's brought into the reality of the experience when he like smells the aliens.
Because he asks if he can smell her. Yeah.
She's like, what can we do to get you to stop screaming?
Like, which is like a 2000s parenting thing of the like, how can we help your body?
Yeah. And he's like, let me smell your hand. The only normal response. And
yeah.
He does. And it smells like cinnamon.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's how I knew it was real.
Yeah.
because I can smell the cinnamon so strongly.
I mean, again, like, what, can you remember a smell from a dream? Like, I don't think dreams have smells.
I can't remember smelling something in a dream, but I can remember, like, everyone acknowledging
the idea of a smell.
Yeah.
Huh. That part is so compelling to me.
You would think he would have asked to read something because you can't read in dreams.
Oh, that's true.
Like the litmus test.
What?
Is that supposedly in dreams you can, like, you can't look at a page of letters. Right. And
what?
Read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are no rules in dreams.
Oh, no. Have you ever read a book in a dream?
Probably.
You can be holding a book and you can be understanding a story, but you can't physically read in a dream.
I don't have dreams anymore because I smoke too much pot. But
that's
when
bad.
I stop, I have the type of vivid nightmares such as might produce a communion dream. And
well,
in
he's
them, I
also
might
very clear that he doesn't do any drugs. Although then
he's such a liar about
he's
that.
He's totally
think.
A liar.
He talks about in interviews. He'll talk about like he went to England. He was like in and out of Eric Clapton's house.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
There was zero cocaine
Please.
At Eric Clapton's house. Let me know.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's another possible explanation. A lot of that stuff causes psychological side effects down the road, especially.
Yes.
But I don't know. I'm not going to diagnose Whitley Strieber. I'm just saying.
Other people have tried and failed.
Yes.
So yeah, that was his first experience. He was returned eventually. I forget, did they sample him then?
They did. They
was that the implant?
Him.
They probed him.
Okay, the anal probe. They did anal probe.
And that is where that comes from, is what I've learned.
Yeah. That was like the beginning of that being a trope.
And he hates
of
South Park because he says it ruined his career, because that was the first South Park episode.
Oh,
was,
man.
I guess, entirely about this particular alien abduction book.
Huh.
That's so weird. I never knew.
I think I just thought these were even older tropes of alien abduction. But now that I think about it, it's very 80s for somebody to introduce, like, and also their sexual assault involved.
Yeah.
You know, because it does seem like in the 50s and 60s, it's sort of just like, oh, and then the cow comes back down weird.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, because I was looking, I was like, where... When did they first start documenting UFO sightings?
Well, this is what's interesting. So there was an essay. It was like actually a back and forth between two people on We Are the Mutants. It was so fascinating to me because they talked about how, I think it was in this one, how in the 50s, the UFO was seen as a largely like non-intervening kind of thing. It was just sort of like an observational thing. But then in the 80s, this is when there was like this explosion of people claiming to have had interactions. And one of the things that they say that I think is really interesting is just how this is a book that is completely really about Stryber's fear and the way that he tries to protect and arm this cabin in the woods. So he has an apartment in New York. He doesn't even really talk about his sense of like fear there. He talks about how in the country he's afraid and he's installed like motion sensor lights.
And again,
he has a shotgun. There's a security system.
So 80s.
It is 80s, but it's also is very strange to go from a city where you would understand feeling like, oh, but especially that, if you're from like a suburb in Texas.
But I just thought of that. Like, he's clearly such a paranoid person. He talks about how like the reason they went to the country was because he was having like nervous breakdowns in his apartment in the city where he was.
You don't
like,
need to be a paranoid person to have nervous breakdowns.
Right.
No, I know, but he was having nervous breakdowns and he was having like intruder fantasy, like nightmares, specifically intruder nightmares and like home invasion nightmares, which I feel like were also just like super stoked by news all the time in the 80s.
Yes.
Well, also he had this experience. I don't know if he talks about it in the book, but he talks about it in the Medium interview about like his parents left him alone for like
11.
Two nights or something when he was 11 in that their house.
That was, I feel like, a totally normal thing back then, but it's still so striking. That they took the rest of they took his siblings.
And then they just left him at home.
They just left him at home, and then he like looked into a room and there's like the window above an air conditioning unit was open. And he called his parents and like, well, if you think somebody's like, come in, call the cops. And then the cops came and he said they were really freaked out, and then they just left. And I feel like that will put like a fear of an intruder. I mean,
right,
I don't know, but I had
sense.
Intruder fears at
a
that
real
age.
Home alone.
Yeah. I had a wicked fear of being home alone.
Oh,
and
coming in. I think everybody does at a certain point. Also, just because, again, like local news, especially, is always like putting that out there as like a reason to be afraid and to never leave your home. I feel like that was why in the 80s people were supposed to never leave their homes, and that's why you turn your home into a fortress.
Well, this is kind of like the other element of 80s man to it is the kind of
shout out 80s man.
Shout out 80s man. It's like the boomer man. Idea of I am a chosen. This is they also talk about this and we Are the Mutants thing where they were just like, it's so boomery to be like, I'm gonna like overarm my house. I'm so afraid of someone like sneaking in and disrupting this like perfect whatever. But then also I am like extra special. I've been chosen for observation by aliens. And then at the same time, in the second half of the book, it's really throughout the book. He talks a lot about how stable his family is. He loves his wife. He loves his son. He doesn't drink. He doesn't do drugs. And then occasionally he'll kind of slip and be like, well, I mean, I was like drinking myself to sleep during that time, or I was having a bad period between October and December.
There was some real Stephen King stuff in there
real
where it was
Stephen
like
King
after
stuff.
The first abduction, my whole family was like really stressed out all the time by me sort of losing it.
Yeah. But it's these conflicting reports of how life was. And I mean, I think it's, you can't fault him for being, something was going on and he was allowed to be stressed.
If this were just presented as a novel, it would be just like an amazing horror novel. But he was very firm that it's nonfiction.
And then his follow-up that was on the bestseller list in New York Times was like, we will not classify this as nonfiction. It's fiction. And he was furious about it. Which is, again, also understandable. I mean, he's very sure that he lived it.
And they also talk about, he introduces this early on about his own conflicting memories and how
the shooter thing.
He thought he was, he said he would tell people he was on campus for the University of Texas shooter.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't.
Yeah.
But he had a very specific false memory of it. So a lot of it does sort of sound like compulsive liar stuff where people make up stories that are interesting to be interesting.
He says something odd of, you know, he was like, they were lies, but they weren't lies because I believed them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, wait, hold up. That is a lie. Like, that's still a lie.
Yeah.
You know, if you know that it doesn't line up.
But then he's just like, there's that stuff. There's all the animal memories too, mm-hmm. where he's like, I saw an owl, but like, I knew I didn't see an owl. I don't know why I said I saw an owl. Like, all that kind of stuff. Where
it would have been so weird to have a barn owl right there.
Like, I know.
Why?
I
know.
Right. You're in the country in a barn.
Yeah.
Right. Is it weird? Or is that why people always say that owls are what they see instead of aliens? Because it's only people in country houses in their barns.
Yeah.
It made me be like, is everybody upstate seeing aliens just like had a little bit too much wine after dinner and they don't want to talk about it?
He had one glass of wine.
I mean, that's the other kind of thing where as a person who would desperately like want to give myself credibility, where that's like the obvious answer is that I was just so drunk. It's like, I'll tell you, I had one drink and one glass. And it's like, you don't remember like. It was like how many years ago and you're remembering how many drinks you had.
I don't know.
But that's the sort of thing too, where if somebody like interrogated you relentlessly about like, okay, then what did you do? Right. Then what did you do? Like your own story might start to slip just because like if you tell it over and over again, it's going to shift.
Yeah. And you start to question things that you would take for granted, like because it's being called into question. Again, we're back in the land of trauma and all of that. But I also wanted to talk about the October incident, because that one is interesting just because there are other witnesses there.
Yes.
And this is, again, one of these things where it's like, this is one of the things where it's like hard to write all the stuff off, because they go to the cabin with Annie and what's her husband's name?
Oh, French. My God.
So Frasier.
Like, I know.
The naming of the friends.
They're like, you know that thing where you invite your friends over to your cabin for a weekend and then you have a lovely weekend of cross-country skiing and you make delicious brunch in the morning, but not until after you've like threatened everybody with a gun because you maybe saw an alien.
Yes.
He doesn't threaten them with a gun.
He just has the gun.
He has a gun.
I thought that's what I'm talking about. I thought that he like brought the gun out. Everybody was like, what are you doing?
No, I think he just mentions that he has it.
Right, but like that's crazy.
No, I don't think he mentioned it to them. He just mentioned it in the course of the, like, he says that he, so I think it's after the October thing when he was feeling really unsettled and like felt like something was like at the house or somebody was like coming to the house, but he still hadn't kind of decided it was these visitors that he bought the shotgun. Which, I mean, okay, we don't condone guns on this podcast. But again, if you think, I don't know, like it's not crazy to me that he has a gun in a cabin in the middle of the woods.
To me, the security system is the crazy thing.
Yeah, and he acknowledges that too. He says, like, there's no reason I should have this stuff, but I got it because I was just feeling so nervous.
And because you're a yuppie in the 80s and somebody's like, we can sell you this and it'll keep you safe.
No
and it's
way.
Like sliver.
I lived for many years with the 80s yuppies in the country and nobody had a security system.
Okay,
they do now.
Okay.
But in fact, it's like a point of pride to like leave your house unlocked and stuff.
Yes, exactly. Doors open. Yeah. Yep. It would have been very, very rare. I mean, he was definitely super duper paranoid. But yeah, so let's go to the October incident with Jacques.
Jacques.
Yeah.
Jinx on the.
This is the one where he's very clear about who has their doors open, but that there's a light that comes in through a window in the living room that I guess all the rooms open out onto, and he sees it because their door is open. And then what does he say? He says something to his wife like, or no, he says that the house is on fire. He starts freaking out saying that the house is on fire.
Because he's like, did I leave a cigarette burning or something?
I don't know. But
he's like, something must have been burning and I must have fallen asleep.
But then he's like instantly also like, never mind, it's fine, go back to sleep. And then he apparently goes back to sleep.
So, yeah. Well, he says, my mind inventoried the possibilities as I watched this blue light, because it was a blue light, so that's what made it super weird, slowly creep up the ceiling as if whatever was causing it was slowly moving down into the front yard from above. Finally, I hit on what seemed to me to be a sensible solution. The chimney must be on fire and dropping sparks into the front yard.
The chimney must be on fire.
I had to do something about it at once. Then I fell into a deep sleep. Great.
I know, that's the thing. But that's the thing where it's like,
yeah,
That's what he goes back and...
That's the thing that feels really nightmarish, too, is that thing of, like, when you're in a dream and you try to, like, run and you can't.
Yeah.
That's what all his abduction experiences are like.
Well, and he also has... I mean, he also just has these unaccounted for, like, blank spots and, like, there's the whole thing.
The missing time.
The missing time in Texas is terrifying.
Oh, my God.
The Austin stuff where he's like... I was heating up my food, and then I looked down, and the food was totally cold because 6 hours had gone by.
Right.
Ah! Yeah. Oh, it's so
it's
scary.
So scary. And so Bud Hopkins, his friend who later, like, observes his hypnosis, he wrote a book called Missing Time because that apparently is, like, the thread that goes through all of these abduction experiences, and that people who are abducted once will be abducted again and have been abducted before, he claims. And the evidence of this abducted, you know, the fact that they've been abducted is the missing time. These, like, blank spaces. And he talks a lot. I don't remember if this is in Communion or in the Bud Hopkins thing, but people driving and then, like, coming to and it's been a while and there's, like, a white
truck
or whatever.
The driving one is really common.
Yeah.
That's... I designed a night call event poster based on the driving abduction.
Wait, remember when we had Rushfield on the show and he talked about his friends?
Oh, yeah. No, I thought of that, too.
Had the experience where they were like...
They're the Brand Park.
Mm-hmm, they went to the park and they, like, walked up the weird hill and they were all of a sudden in a car driving.
Yeah.
What if they got abducted?
Something similar happened to me. I'm not going to, like, go into it, but I don't think it was an abduction.
I think you should go into it.
No, there was a time when I was not drinking or doing anything.
I had one drink.
and one glass of wine. No, I was the because I went to a party. This was a very long time ago with friends, and I wasn't, like, very comfortable with the crowd. So I was like, I'll drive. And we were on the freeway, and there was, like, a... You know, I have no idea how much time elapsed, but all of a sudden I was, like, in a different lane, had missed the exit, no idea what had happened. But I had been having fainting spells at the time, and I assumed I had, like, you know, had a fainting thing. But normally with the fainting spells, I would, like, collapse.
Yeah, but you kept driving.
And I didn't. And what's weird, apparently, is that the car continues, like, people aren't usually harmed in these instances, to my understanding, when they're, I mean, I don't think I was, like, missing time. I think I was zoning out.
Bored.
Yeah. I think my mind wandered and I drove badly. But it's interesting because you're like, one of the things that they point out is, like, you would think if you were zapped away that you would, your car would crash, but it seems to be not the case, that the car continues on the path. It's just that all of a sudden you're like, somewhere you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Well, there's also the idea that you're, like, entering a parallel dimension. Yeah. So maybe
the multiverse.
The physical body is still there.
Right.
Well, it's the arrival thing where time moves differently when she's in the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which way it is, if she can spend, like, 4 hours in there and, like, 30 minutes have gone by. I can't remember. Or is that an
arrival or
arrival?
Something else?
I can't remember.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know if it was an arrival.
Or contact.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about contact, too, because There's another common trope that contact uses as well, which is like the idea of these visitors being interested in our minds and our subconsciouses, and so, like, gathering data from them and then using that to talk to us or communicate with us.
I just watched Stargate again, which is a great movie. It's kind of about ancient aliens.
Yeah. No, I think I watched it last year again.
Parallel dimension.
My mom's a big fan.
Yeah. That movie's amazing because James Spader plays, like, a wholesome virgin, and that is, like, the most perverse thing he could possibly do. Every other movie, he plays a guy who can only get it up for some weird thing.
Yeah.
And, like, in that movie, it's, like, pyramids. That's great. Me too, James Spader.
Yeah, same. So I wanted to talk with you guys about what you thought about whether Whitley Strieber was... So one of the theories I read about, and I don't remember where, but was that he talks a lot about the female alien who he's kind of like...
Yeah.
I don't know if he explicitly says he's attracted to her, but it's, like, heavily implied.
I hate her, but, like, I'm so, like, for some reason, I'm like...
They have a real Sam and Diane thing.
But he's, like, also, like, physically aroused in her presence.
Yeah. And he's, like, uncomfortable.
But
about
he also is, like, we don't know if they have genders. We can't.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is, like, in some of Stryber's fiction, there's a lot of like, you know, vampires having babies with humans.
Yeah, all of his fiction is about mating with
the ancient mystical creature. Mm-hmm. But what's kind of weird, you know, so basically he had also written speculative fiction about both nuclear apocalypse mm-hmm. and climate apocalypse. And he was like super on the
in it. Yeah, well, like War Day, which I think was the last book he had done before this all happened mm-hmm. to him. The 1985 stuff happened to him. Yeah. I think he had been super steeped in it.
But yeah, his fears, like he clearly was just so freaked out by the speculative fiction. And he definitely...
And some of that stuff, too, you're like, oh, that's what a lot of people are going through that now.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And so he kind of was... I think he was basically in the position where he was like, well, we have to, like, think about alternatives to Earth. And he had a son, which also, like, is stressful because he's like, even if I'm fine, like, he might not be fine. Yeah. And he kind of was calling the climate crisis in the 80s. Yeah. Like, he was one of the first people to
he
be
was
like,
actively
hello.
Upset about, like, what Earth was going to be like in 50 years.
And he
from
was
1985.
Right. He was totally right. Yeah. He was totally right. But I think, you know, inventing this kind of race of, like, beings who are smart enough to be able to like, so they implanted a chip in his ear, which then he thinks now can read his thoughts and also like suggest things to him, like mm-hmm. the number 137, mm-hmm. where it's just like 137, and then he has to figure out what it means or whatever. But it's almost like he was so panicked about what he thought would happen to the world that he had to kind of invent a way out, and he had to be chosen to be the messenger. And like the mother alien who can save us all. I'm sure he would hate that reading on it, but
isn't there some point where they are talking about climate change, the aliens are? Or they're like talking about the future of the planet? I feel like I didn't make this up.
No, that sounds familiar.
He gets a weird visit in the night. This is not in the book. This mm-hmm. is later. He gets basically the suggestion for Day After Tomorrow.
Oh yeah, this is crazy.
From some like dude in a trench coat who walks into his hotel room and after midnight and tells him like we can't abandon our planet.
Well, let's talk about that stuff.
Okay.
So some of Whitley Strieber's later books. So his work is generally like this horror novels and then his sort of communion and post communion work that mm-hmm. is all supposed to be nonfiction. But
well, and there's also a lot of like apocalyptic stuff around communion and post-communion too.
So he wrote this book, The Key, which is about the visitor who was supposedly the man in the trench coat who came to him from the future probably and like told him a bunch of secrets. People have pointed out that mm-hmm. all of the secrets he heard from this man actually come from George Gurdjieff, who is this philosopher that... Whitley Strieber was really into, studied for a million years, and we should talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, I'd never heard of him.
I've never heard of him either.
An Armenian mystic and philosopher. Gurdjieff.
I don't know. I don't know how to read this pronunciation thing on here.
He came up with what he called the fourth way, which was a self-help method that involves OA-like dancing.
It is exactly like the
very
OA.
Interested in.
He invented something called the Gurdjieff movements, which are a combination of other sacred dances. Basically, this guy was sort of early on the... kind of synthesizing Eastern religions with New Age stuff mm-hmm, tip. Mm-hmm. And so when he brought it to America, a lot of people got into it, such as Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah.
There's 39 movements.
Henry Miller. But yeah, it looks like what he did, I mean, the Gurdjieff stuff is not super quacky. It's actually like
it's like mindfulness. One of the conscious labor is mindfulness, and then intentional suffering
it's
is
all
basically
and it's got a little
not
bit,
snacking.
There's a whole like it's got a little bit of like Matrixiness to it because it's mm-hmm. all about like everyone is asleep until you wake up. You have mm-hmm. to wake up and like live your life consciously because otherwise you're just going through the movements. And I think the Gurdjieff movements mm-hmm. help you wake up.
I want to learn them.
Yeah,
somebody want to teach them to us?
Yeah, well, he gave the first public demonstration of the sacred dances in 1919. So he was like, he sort of gathered followers throughout Europe.
I mean, Britt Marling absolutely like took this from for OA, right?
I mean it seems so like it familiar. Has to be. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so interesting. I can't wait to read more about this.
Yeah.
So interesting. But he also did like Enneagram stuff as well.
So he popularized like,
he wrote a book called Beelzebub's Tales, which is allegory about an alien.
Okay. With his grandson?
Yeah, it's about an alien and the alien's grandson. And they like go through a bunch of trials on this new planet. And it's all like a metaphor for something, but it's also about aliens.
So the guy who came to Stryber's hotel room and told him, so that guy, the guy who showed up at his hotel room, didn't he say that he was like, hey, I'm trying to make sense of my notes on this. The man warned him about climate crisis by way of a strange anecdote about a child who could have invented extraterrestrial travel but had never been born because his or her parents died in the Holocaust is like what the synopsis that like I took from what the man said to Whitley Stryber, which seems like,
Well, there is an episode described in Communion about him trying to build some kind of spacecraft as a child because he received instructions from, he told his friends, his friend had the memory of him telling him as a kid, which seems like out of context, like, oh, something that kid says, like, oh, an alien came and visited me and told me how to make a spaceship. I'm going to make one. And then he like knocked out the power in their house.
It was
like,
using magnets or something.
Some kind of magnetic, kinetic, whatever the fuck. Yeah, that's just what I thought of when I heard that, except for the whole Holocaust
thing. The Holocaust thing really throws it in a whole other direction.
Yeah, I mean, some of the later stuff, it starts to seem to rope in more just kind of conspiracy theory-y things from other corners and sort of be, you know, in the way that people start to be like, just asking questions.
Right.
Like maybe it doesn't add up to anything. I was reading a lot of stuff about, there's like this new book about the Manson family murders that was written by somebody who sort of like researched it for a million years and like didn't necessarily find anything new, but then took that as evidence that like everyone was lying because they didn't want to talk about it. I feel like it's like, just, I read an interview with that guy where it was just felt very similar to with the Stryber interviews, where it's like at a certain point, once you start to unravel, it's like it all starts to
It kind of falls apart.
Well, and part of me is just like, it's like when we talk about ghosts and stuff like that. I mean, I've never seen a ghost. I also just like pretty much like, I'm interested in the idea of ghosts, but I pretty much fundamentally don't believe in them at the end of the day, if you're really going to ask me. So like, is that why I've never seen a ghost? It's that kind of thing where it's just like, he's had this sort of paradigm shifting experience. We don't really know the truth of it, what actually happened. But whatever it was, it has opened him up to a plethora of possibilities about like what could be happening in the world.
I mean, here's my reading. A lot of his books also, in the way that they are about like communing with some other species.
Cat magic.
Well, it's interesting that he's so boring and straight, because all of his books are like really queer and weird.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that is like, he's also a Catholic guy.
Yeah.
And there's Catholic esotericism in there. But to me, I was a little bit like, is this about a closeted guy?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep expert. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Again, that goes back to the thing of like, oh, my life is ruined because I can't hang out with my like waspy New York friends.
Right.
Like he still considers that to be something that's like missing. That like this, he will like stick to the truth of like his truth.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly his truth here of what happened to him. But he's still like hanging on to some idea of like normalcy. Mm-hmm. Or and like and in his case, it's a very like white bread American normalcy that he's
And he's not like willing to give that up totally because he's like everyone should be listening to me because I am the paragon of intelligence. I'm the smartest man alive. Yeah. Obviously, I'm telling the truth.
It's yeah.
He's so forthcoming. I think what makes it hard to completely dismiss what he says happened to him is that he seems so open to any number of possible explanations.
Yeah, totally.
As long as it stays true to like the only things he does know are he was physically affected. Sometimes there were witnesses. He apparently approached people, about things and didn't tell them like what had happened to him. And they kind of knew.
Yeah.
We got a night letter about this where somebody brought up the possibility that this book was about child abuse and about the author character abusing their son and the whole thing being an elaborate sort of way to try and make sense of that, which again, we don't know. We're just speculating, but definitely it has a lot of similarities to The Shining to me in that way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Where I'm like, this feels like a dad with a problem and some secrets.
Yeah.
Trying not to like ruin his kid's life by being a real person, but like inevitably will.
Yes. I mean, I think it's really important for us to state that all of, you know, any kind of speculation into whatever happened is purely speculation. Because I really feel like what happened is a person with a very vivid imagination became completely paralyzed with fear. And it was like a kind of, you know, it was informed by the books that he was writing, the research he was doing. Like he was hanging out with Art Bell writing the book that would become The Day After Tomorrow. And like, you know, he there was this weird overlap for him between his friends who were kind of fringy and his friends who were intellectuals. And he kind of got this weird slice of the pie where he was getting really, really smart conspiracy theorists, and that's who he was surrounding himself with. And they really reinforce, like, you should be terrified. You should be terrified in your cabin. You should be terrified that the planet's going to explode. And I think he had, like, and again, it's totally speculative. I think he had a psychotic break, and then I think he kind of recovered from it, but couldn't integrate that into like his experience unless he found some other explanation.
Yeah.
And he's open to that being a possibility too. I mean,
kind of.
He says like something happened.
Yeah. But yeah, he's always, he's, Exactly what you said. Like, the fact that he leaves that possibility open, that he's never really actively trying, he's not a biased, there's a word for this in like the scientific method where you're, whatever, it's like confirmation bias or something like that.
Yeah, he's not, like, well, he claims he's not somebody who like was looking to have a UFO abduction,
right.
But it does feel like all of his fiction is about like special people being chosen to commune with an otherworldly being. And like his most recent book is like his wife died. And then I guess he keeps a blog where he's like channeling her.
He has to meditate twice every evening in this special way, because if he doesn't, then the aliens will tap him and kiss him and wake him up. And when he meditates, he is able to feel his wife's presence. And also his wife, he and his wife had made a deal before she died. She was sick for a long time. They said, after we die, whoever dies first, don't directly try to contact me as a ghost. Do it through our friends, which like, what? Okay. So apparently his wife passed away and then contacted his friends and would be like, call Whitley.
Yeah.
And
it was like an hour and a half after she died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
I wonder how his son is.
Yeah, me too. I just can't imagine. Yeah, it is like The Shining. It's like, what is that like to go through that when you're...
Well, because when you're a kid too, it's like you need your parents to be stable even if they're not. So like maybe they like try to hide the fact that like they also don't know what's going on and are afraid of things. And so...
He's pretty clear in a few different moments. He talks about the fact that he tried to keep, you know, anything that would disturb his... Like he tries, according to what he says, he tries really hard to like preserve normalcy for his son. And seems to feel really guilty about the times when his son became aware that something was going on. But it also kind of reminds me of, you know, Morgellons or Morgellons, for instance, where it's something that, you know, no one believes you. And of course, there's that element to it. And it's so isolating that if you find other people who claim to have experienced this, and, you know, again, like the folklore kind of builds on itself and people have more similar experiences because of that. Mm-hmm. But you just form this really tight community and it kind of ostracizes, like you're bound together by the only people, they're the only people who think you're sane. And
well, there's a really great X-Files episode about communion.
Okay.
One of the best X-Files episodes of all time, called Jose Chung's From Outer Space, which is about Charles Nelson Reilly playing a Whitley Strieber type guy named Jose Chung, who has a book called From Outer Space. And the cover is exactly the cover of Communion, but with the alien smoking a cigarette. But it's like a classic episode also because it's kind of like a comedy episode. And it is about people's different stories, different overlapping stories about an alien abduction and how they all, it's like a Rashomon thing where nothing really lines up at the end, you know? It kind of like seems like he's a kook, but then it seems like, what if he's not? Maybe he's telling the truth. Great episode, recommend it to everybody. But that's where I encountered this for the first time. I had never heard of this book until you suggested it, and now I have found out that it is so deep in the cultural consciousness.
It is. Also, just because it derailed this poor man's writing career. And so,
I mean, it's like a hard book to read also because it's like in the way that when you read a book where it feels like somebody is having a mental breakdown in the writing and then it makes you feel like you're having a mental breakdown.
Well, the timing of reading this was also, I thought, really heavy because in the past, since we've been reading this book, the Jeffrey Epstein whole thing went from being a pretty straightforward but crazy story to a completely plausible conspiracy theory.
Well, it's not a theory then.
It's not true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's the thing, is that all of a sudden you are reading mainstream news and completely entertaining the probability that there is a conspiracy.
Right.
Which makes you feel kind of off.
It made me feel crazy because some of the stuff they were posting on Crazy Days and Nights and you know, at a certain point,
like
I thought
the lightest corner of where that stuff goes.
I thought
on.
I was like, oh, this is just going into Pizzagate stuff. It's just part of Pizzagate. But then it was like, no. This is like the grain of truth that was apparently in the telephone game of Pizzagate.
I got stuck down a very regrettable rabbit hole that did not start with me looking into Epstein stuff. It started with something too weird to explain here right now. It would take too long. But I ended up on a very fringy, I wouldn't say it was like a QAnon message board, but it was like that. It felt like it was two steps away from that.
I was looking at Rational Wiki yesterday.
Oh, cool. Chill.
Been there, yeah.
No, but they were talking about, there was a thread on Epstein and they were just saying like, this is a thing. Like, people make fun of Pizzagate because they think it's like about Hillary Clinton has a sex ring in Comet Pizza or whatever that place is called. Mm-hmm. But like, we're talking about like a whole phenomenon of shit. And I was like, for the first time, I was like, oh shit.
Hold up.
No, and I was saying, like, in a weird way, like, because as that story started to zoom out, I went on this other podcast, Truanon, that's just about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Like, we're slipping.
No. It's like, that's the thing. It's like
the times we live in.
We're bringing conspiracy theories back for the left. That's what we set out to do.
I know. Reclaim them.
You know, somebody's saying Inherent Vice is like the actual best movie for the Trump era because it's about how those things do line up, how it feels conspiratorial.
Yeah.
In cities, especially when you're just like, oh, like this person's in the pocket of this person who really knows that, you know, people who shouldn't know each other for any reason except that money and power is changing hands.
Yeah.
Eyes Wide Shut is a documentary. But yeah, Eyes Wide Shut is real. I'm not over that. I do feel like I've become Whitley Strieber a little bit because all this stuff has broken my brain a little bit of like, oh, wait, like there are like evil rich elites operating sex trafficking rings in broad daylight in front of people just using the fact that they're rich as cover for crimes nobody should be able to get away with.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's real.
Then anything can be real.
Well, it's not.
Well, but that's so rad. Like that, when you look back at that with hindsight, with like Occam's razor, you're like, yeah, of course.
But when it came, but when it came up on Crazy Days and Nights, I was like, this is so detailed. How could it be fake?
Yeah.
But it's like who? Like it's too crazy and far fetched. And like once it clearly started implicating the Clintons, I thought it was just right wing stuff. But then it came out to be like just beat for beat true. And then one of them, not Enty, but Him with many M's, who's the other one, was posting about some of that stuff. He posted a great like 3-part blind item about it. Again, not saying any of this is true.
You
but
say it's a great 3. I could not read it. For me, it was just too.
Their writing is terrible.
I know. Fast.
But Him is a terrible writer.
But it's like, it zoomed out on the stuff where it was like, it's not even about the sex trafficking ring. It's about different nations having like secret deals with each other involving Mossad, you know? And that part, again, broke my brain. I was like, Epstein's just the fall guy. It's all like, it's everything is connected.
Oh my God.
And then you can't do anything again after that. You just start thinking that way about everything.
And suddenly you're writing books about UFOs instead of just cat magic.
Well,
what happens?
I would encourage people to go to Whitley Strieber's website, which is called Unknown Countries.
Yeah, he also does the podcast Dreamland, which was a former Art Bell podcast.
He's like an active content maker, which is kind of interesting. Then this interview that we can link to of his recent. I mean, he's still on the case. The thing that's funny about his website is that it is all this stuff and then stuff about climate change. Like really passionate, like cogent stuff about climate change.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If he wants to come, if he wants to come collect his awards for being right about climate change, now would be a great time for him to reappear and be like, hey, guess what?
Called it.
I also, this is one last thing I wanted to say, just as far as like believing him about this stuff. Mm-hmm. I just like, so I kind of started to play the game of like, if I was an alien civilization that was coming to study another species, how would I go about it? What would be the way?
What a fun nerd game.
Well, because that's like a lot of the stuff on first blush does look very dreamlike and kind of random and like feels like cobbled together from like some real corporeal experiences, the way that a dream is.
It always sounds like surgery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I was thinking about is like the repeat things, like, this thing of like once you've had an experience you're gonna have more and you've probably had ones before, it's just like, well, that's just having a control. Like if you are studying monkeys in the wild, you're gonna tag them and you're gonna come back and study the same
so
monkey
you think
over time.
Certain people are acting as control subjects for the aliens.
Well, yeah, I mean that makes sense to me. That's
but like how are they being chosen?
I don't know, because they're very special and they write great novels.
but my God, what if there's like an Epstein Island, but it's a planet?
No,
that sounds horrible.
No, thank you.
But I'm saying, what if there's like evil elite, you know?
Oh, they already have colonized the
planet. Would you be surprised if Elon Musk already owned a secret planet?
I'd be so surprised. I think he would have stopped tweeting and he would have just gone there.
Nobody should own a planet or an island.
I agree.
Tess, what do you think? Do you think...
What do I think about what? Should people own islands?
No, should...
Why are people chosen?
Yeah.
I mean, so this... I think for anyone who wants to answer that question, go look at the Bud Hopkins Wikipedia, because I felt like it gave me such a good frame on this. I mean, I do think that it's that, you know, people who are Whitley Strieber's a really good writer. Like, yes. Granted, he lost me by the end of the book. And I was like, I can't because I didn't trust him and I didn't enjoy being mired in the conspiracy 24/7.
Did it also make you start to feel like you were losing it a little bit?
It has.
Because that's like, yeah. I've only had to put down a book once before because it had that effect on me. And mm-hmm. It was this Oliver Sacks book about hallucinations.
Oh, yeah. I read that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like I literally had to stop reading it because if you're someone who's ever had mental health issues mm-hmm. and you start thinking about your brain and the ways in which it can fail
the
or glitch out.
The weaknesses of the human brain.
Definitely the screen memories in this was like, oh, okay, definitely. Yeah. Sure. I have screen memories.
Right. Like in the Oliver Sacks.
What if it's all a screen memory?
But that's the Matrix, y'all.
I know.
I think Whitley Strieber would say he was chosen because he's a really good communicator with a very open mind. And I think that he would say that like the creatures that he had written about in fiction that then ended up resembling the creatures that he met in the 80s when he was abducted or whatever, that they had always been with
him. Right. He was writing the books
because
he'd already been encountering.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, before reading this book, I was way more open to the idea that this dude had met extraterrestrials. And by the end of it, I was like, I don't think that happened.
I haven't gotten to that part yet because I'm still, like, pretty open. Like, I'm not – my first instinct is not to be like, he's out of his mind.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think he's out of his mind.
It's not quite like a psychotic break either to me because what it really sounds like – and again, he's Catholic. It's like enlightenment. You know, it's like you're special, you ascended, and now you come back to Earth with knowledge that nobody else has, and you have to like live among regular people knowing more than they do.
Yeah.
Which was what he was feeling about climate change.
Right. That's true. Yeah. That's true, too.
It's like it's like an actually inconvenient sort of
an inconvenient truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's an extra inconvenient truth because on top of that, if Al Gore was like, and by the way, I got this from aliens.
Right.
Even less would be done about
if
this stuff.
If Al Gore
now.
Was an alien, would you be at all surprised. He's like the most lizard person presenting.
But it would make me so happy if he was an alien. I would be like, if that's it, like,
bring it on.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I still recommend people read this book.
It's super interesting. Yes. It's a first-hand account.
Yeah.
I'm putting that in air quotes retrospectively.
It's a cinnamon hand account.
And as he said himself, they can't be lies because even if they're not true, he believes them. And I'm like, okay, that I can digest.
Yeah.
I mean, something happened to this man. He's trying to process. He's honestly trying to process it.
And
he's working it.
If nothing else, if it's not a book about UFOs, which I think he would probably even want you to not say it's a book about UFOs.
It's called Communion.
It's about
communion.
Well, it's about the human mind. It's about like... processing anything. In his case, he has a lot of crazy stuff to process.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I think it makes you think about your own experiences and stuff that you've been through, which is like why it's so scary.
Yeah. And honestly, I think one of the scariest things is the hypnosis and the regressive memories and stuff like that. And that is it's a very good unintentional warning against doing that.
Right.
Because without any of
that. Oh, I was like, I want to do it.
Oh. For me, I was like, wow, without any of that, I think this book would have gone in a totally different direction. And the more you know about that, the more you think that's a very shaky foundation to build.
Well, I think it's like we're also the thing about hypnosis. Yeah, it's just the human mind is vulnerable.
Yeah, easily manipulated.
If you let somebody poke around in there, that is the scariest idea.
Yeah.
I know. I am scared of it for those reasons, but I was also just like, what would come out?
Right, yeah.
It's like getting a colonic. It's like, what comes out?
Well, clearly it is like getting a colonic.
Yeah.
What kind of alien would you like to meet?
I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of, well, I actually do like the idea of like the contact like alien, like especially after reading this, like the alien that like mines your subconscious and presents as something that is compelling to you. Like it's like a Rorschach test of an alien.
Oh,
that's
so scary though.
But it is. But it's like very, because like, I would want to know what would it be. It's like, or it's like even in like stupid shit like Captain Marvel. There's like a thing where they go and talk to whoever, like the great authority takes the form of like whoever in their mind is like the most admirable person to them. Mm-hmm. So she sees it at Benin.
See, I personally don't care for in a space movie when they like finally meet the alien and it's like your dead wife.
Oh yeah.
Or like your child self.
You know? Who I would like is the little ones in the jars from Flight of the Navigator.
Ooh.
Those are my platonic ideal aliens.
I want like, who are those little weird guys from Final Fantasy?
Oh, the like Moogles?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, those would be cute. Yeah. Or like Tribbles?
Yeah.
Just like a something cutie, soft,
docile.
Yeah.
Like not little, overbearing.
Like something that purrs.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that purrs. Like a Furby. Furby.
You know the cat from Sailor Moon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shows up in the first day and starts talking to you. That's what I want.
Well, she's an alien. She's
not
a real cat.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the cat who comes to tell you that you're also an alien.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about Sailor Moon also is that they're all technically aliens.
Yeah.
Reincarnated.
We're Stardust, after all.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that's it for Communion. Thanks, everybody, for reading along with us, taking the ride with us on Communion. We're going to announce our next book soon, but we're not at this moment going to do it because we don't have it yet.
I got some thoughts.
Yeah.
We'd also continue to take your suggestions for our next book. Let us know what you. We're still in the process of moving and starting at our new network.
We're so close.
By the time you hear this, it's probably going to be old news, and we'll be up. But
we'll be ascended.
And once we do that, I think we'll announce our next book.
Yeah, but in the meantime, if you have any thoughts or questions, you can contact us at 240. Contact us. You can make communion
with us.
240-469 or nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for supporting the Patreon. If you want to tell other people to support it as well, it's patreon.com/nightcall. And as always, when we're back on the air, please give us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe, but I think you already have because you're supporting the Patreon. So thank you again. Yeah, you better be.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next month.
Bye.
Next month.
Night Call is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope.
To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.